I'm thankful for our opportunity to be together this morning. You know, we could be living in a place where there is no place to go together to worship with others. I want to be very thankful for the opportunity I have, the health I have to be able to come and worship with others that have had battles and things that they go through also through the week, but yet a determination to make heaven our home, and we get to feed each other. There's a subject that the Lord's been dealing with me about this week. One word, fervent. And when you think in your mind what fervent means, I look at a definition: ardent, earnest, animated, boiling. And I have a little example this morning to start with. Mansell was talking to me this week that he has a grandson that this morning was to run a 26-mile race. You know, fervent to him looks different than when I was a boy in school and you have mark off from here to the fence and you run it. You know what fervent means when you're running 50 yards? Just go wide open. Go for it. You know what? Fervent is not the same for the person that's going to run 26 miles. He has, fervent to him is, I'm going to do what I need to do to gain that prize at the end of it. There's a lot of things people do. At work, they have in the high-rise buildings there, they came up with a contest called Dare to Stare. It's a stair-climbing contest. And there may be 300 or 400 people join it. And they time them, each one. They start in our building. They run up 16 flights of stairs, up to 16 floors, go across the hall and come back down 16. Run across our atrium to a 21-story building that we have. Run up to the top of it and back down again. And then run across the street on a bridge to a 31-story building, up to the top of it and back down again. And then if you can run or if you can make it, you come back to the starting point again. You know what fervent means to some of those? Maybe the first time they ever thought about it and they had run a couple floors of stairs before and thought, I can do it. And they take out, you know, some can take 3 steps at a time for a little bit, but they won't make it all the way back again. You know, they might would have called that fervent. Fervent to the other person, and they use it, firemen use it for their exercise. In fact, they will wear their suits and take the stairs because they've got to do it. I can remember when I worked at Williams Center in Tulsa years ago, they had a fire. It's a 51-story building. And it was on the top floor. Well, the elevators would shut down in a fire, so the only way to go up there to do it is to run the stairs. And they started up the stair full gear. They had, before they got to the 51st floor, there were so many things laid aside, their oxygen tanks, their axe to chop the door down, just littered through the stairwell, because if I'm going to even make it, I'm going to have to get some weight off. Well, I'm interested in us today taking a look at what fervent means for us. Because I can have a short distance run wide open, and I call that fervent. But it's whether I make it to the goal or not. We sing this song, and I hope to sing it at the end of the service. Song 223 goes along good with this. I got this little determination. I mean to go right on until the crown is won. I mean to fight the fight of faith till life on earth is done. I'll never more turn back. Defeat I shall not know. For God will give me victory if onward I shall go. This is not a 50-yard dash we're talking about right here. This is a lifetime of however many years it may be. And then it says in the chorus, until the final triumph, I'm going on. So I look at what fervent means for that. Is day by day doing what needs to be done to be able to make it. I like to think of fervent also as being having a purpose and having a focus for that purpose. I'd like to start with a story in 2 Kings the second chapter. This is an interesting story to me. Elijah knows he's going to be taken up. And somehow, Elisha also knows it. And they are together. In the second chapter, first verse, came to pass when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. Second verse, Elijah said to Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said to him, in other words, I've got some more trip yet to take. He's not even talking about being taken up, but somehow there is this understanding. And he's telling Elisha, you stay here now. I'm going to go on to another town. And Elisha says to him, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel. And see, there's some kind of an understanding going on, because it says in the school of the prophets, they were telling Elisha, next verse, knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy master from thy head today? And he said, yea, I know it. Hold your peace. Fourth verse, Elisha, now he's ready to move on. Elijah's moving on to another place. Tells Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee. The Lord sent me to Jericho. Again, I'm looking at this fervency that Elisha has. You're telling me to do this, but I know something is coming up, and I will not be turned from it. And Elisha tells him the same thing again. As the Lord liveth, as thy soul liveth, I won't leave thee. They came to Jericho. Then it moves on down. There's another place, sixth verse. Elijah tells him, tarry here. The Lord hath sent me to Jordan. And he said, as the Lord liveth, I will not leave thee. And they went on. And here's this knowledge that Elijah is soon going to be gone, and Elisha is going to be right there with him. He will not be turned aside. Fervency, I think, includes us having a determination. Tell you what, I've got this goal out ahead that I'm striving for, and nothing is going to stop me. What was the desire that he was striving for? You know, it would have been something to be with him at the eighth verse. They stood by Jordan. You know, the Jordan River didn't part just one time when the Israelites were needing to cross. I hadn't really thought of that much before. But it parted the second time. It says, they two stood by Jordan, the seventh verse, eighth verse. Elijah took his mantle, wrapped it together, smote the waters, and they were divided hither and thither. So they went over on dry ground. That's amazing. Just for two people, God does this special thing. And then in the ninth verse it says, Elijah says to Elisha, ask what I shall do for thee before I'm taken away from thee. And Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. Tenth verse, thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if you see me when I'm taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. But if not, it shall not be so. What would fervency look to you like then? I know what I need to do. There's something I need to do for this to happen. I must see Elijah when he's taken away. You know how fast that could happen? What does it talk about? The end of time is going to come in a twinkling of an eye. You could blink your eye and this event has happened. So I'm thinking there is nothing that's drawing Elisha's attention away. Every move Elijah makes, he's right on him. I'm not distracted by looking at what somebody else is doing. I'm focused on this one thing. And it says in the 11th verse, came to pass as they still went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire and parted them both asunder. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. That would be something. That probably didn't take very many seconds for that to happen. But Elisha had a purpose. I want a double portion of your spirit. And he committed himself to making that happen. I call that fervency, a determination that he had. Solomon, the Lord met him in a dream, and he said, you just ask what you want, and I'll give it to you. What would you ask for? You know, there's a lot of things that we could ask for. I used to think whenever I was a child, whenever I'd be told, you know, you'd hear, read these little stories, you get three wishes. What would you wish for? Well, I always said, I know what I'd do. I would make sure I kept the count right. And on my third wish, I'd say, I want three more wishes. Just keep this thing going. But to be able to, Solomon has this opportunity. You get a wish, I'm going to give it to you, whatever you want. What was Solomon's desire? There was a fervency, I believe, in his heart. And his desire was, here's what I want. I'm like a child. I feel like I'm a child. And I'm ruling now this great people of yours. I need an understanding heart. That's what I want to be able to have. Because, you know, he wasn't just seeing today how great it would be to be wealthy. He sees how important it would be to lead the people in the right direction. For us today, I was singing another song. What's my desire today? If the Lord said, I'll tell you what, you ask and I'll give you your wish. Would this be your wish? More like Christ, my heart is praying. You know, we got a lot of things we'd like to have. What about if that was the fervency of my heart? Lord, I tell you what, I want to be more like Christ. Don't worry about all these others. It says, I'll give you the desires, delight yourself in the Lord, and I'll give you the desires of your heart. What would that be? If I delight in the Lord, I can get a new car if I want it. No, you know what? When I delight myself in the Lord, those desires are going to follow right along with it. I believe the Lord knew what Solomon's heart was. He just gave him an opportunity to express his heart. He knew that down inside, I can open this up to Solomon because I know the direction that he wants to take. More like Christ, my heart is praying, more like Christ from day to day. All of his graces, rich displaying, this is the desire that I have as I tread my pilgrim way. Focus is real important because we're living in a time where there is a whole lot of things to distract us. And it happened with Peter. You know, when Jesus went to Peter and he said, follow me. And Peter starts to follow him and he lost his focus. What happened to his focus? He saw somebody else. He saw John. And he got to wondering, okay, I know what I'm supposed to do. I know I'm supposed to follow the Lord. But he asked Jesus, he said, what's this man supposed to be doing? You know, we can get distracted with that. I need to have a fervency about me that does not get distracted by other things that's happening around me. But to be able to focus, here's my goal. Should that run still be going on for the 26 miles, he's got an end thought out ahead. And you know, he also knows how to pace himself if he expects to be able to do it. You know, we can so easily be that when we get an inspiration, all of a sudden it's like pouring gas on a little flame and it just explodes and we're just ready to go for the Lord. But you know what we want it to do is we want that to last. Yes. We want something that will last. If I live the next 50 years, I'll be faithful to the Lord. So I think of Elisha. Now Elijah's gone, and he's wanting to see fervency in somebody else. Over in 2 Kings, now Elisha himself is about to die, and the king realizes how valuable Elisha has been to him. In the 13th chapter, it tells us that in the 16th verse, see, the Elisha's fallen sick, 14th verse, Joash the king comes to him, and he wept over his face, saying, oh, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. He's got a concern. You have been able to help me out so much in the past. You remember times when Elisha was able to understand what the king of Syria had in mind? The king of Syria is planning to attack this certain area. Elisha hears from the Lord and he warns the king, and the king is able to prevent it from happening several times, to the point that the king of Syria realized there's no need for me to pursue this fighting anymore. Something's going on. You remember that's when they sent troops to Dothan surrounded the city. We've got to get Elisha. Well, Elisha now, this king is realizing this benefit that I had is almost gone. And so Elisha is going to tell him to do something here, 15th verse. Elisha said to him, take bows and arrows. He took bows and arrow. He said to the king, put thy hand upon the bow, and he put his hand upon it. And Elisha put his hands upon the king's hands. He said, open the window eastward. He opened it. Elisha said, shoot. He shot. He said, the arrow of the Lord's deliverance and the arrow of deliverance from Syria, for thou shalt smite the Syrians till you have consumed them. So then he says in the 18th verse, you know, we're looking for fervency. We're looking for having a zeal, a determination. 18th verse, he says, take the arrows. He took them. Said to the king of Israel, smite upon the ground. He didn't tell him how many times to smite. He took the arrows and he smote on the ground. And it says the man of God in the 19th verse was wroth with him. You should have smitten 5 or 6 times. Well, why didn't he tell him to smite 5 or 6 times? What he was wanting to know is, what fervency does this king have? When just now we shot an arrow out the window and I told him this is about the deliverance of you against the Syrians. And now smite the ground. You know, I think what he was wanting was that there would be so much fervency in that king that he just, oh, okay, this is talking about, this is expressing deliverance from the Syrians. I'm going to wear these arrows out, whopping them on the ground. I'm going to do it till there's nothing left of arrows. And it tells him, you know what? If you would have smitten 5 or 6 times, you would have smitten Syria till thou hadst consumed it. But now it's going to be different. I looked at the commentary on that. It says Joash did the prophet's bidding. He smote the ground. But it said it was without any fervency. It was just, okay, I don't see what benefit this is. Okay, we're through with that now 3 times. But he said he did it without any fervency and probably without any earnest belief in the effect that it would have. What difference is it going to make for me putting much fervency in this? So now the call comes to me. Let's look over in Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter, and the 4th and 5th verse. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all your heart, all your soul, and with all thy might. I look at that verse, and I read it, and now for the proving of it. How do I go about proving my love for the Lord? So I have a few verses that I'd like for us to look at. Over in 2 Corinthians, the 7th chapter, and in the 11th verse. Behold, this talks about a fervency. Behold, this selfsame thing that you sorrowed after a godly sort. And here's what happened because of it. Carefulness, what a carefulness it wrought in you. What clearing of yourselves. What indignation, what fear, what vehement desire. We want that godly sorrow to cause me to have a vehement desire. Not just like smite, okay, I smote the ground 3 times. No, if I know what will cause the devil to be put on the run, I want to focus on that. I want victory in my life. A vehement desire. What does a vehement desire look like? It's expressed over here, and this doesn't have a man's name to it. I believe it's intended to be for all of us. Psalms 1 and 1. There are some things that we lay aside for the Lord. Blessed is a man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But here is this fervency. His delight. Where's our delight in 2024? There's a lot of things that I could delight myself in. But his delight is in the law of the Lord. In his law doth he meditate day and night. And it works something in his life. He shall be like a tree planted by the waters, bringeth forth fruit in his season. His leaf shall not wither. And whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. So it's talking about delight. That's my part. That's how much I focus, how much I am not going to be distracted by other things around me. Psalms 37 and 4 has the verse, "Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he will give thee the desires of thy heart." More like Christ is what I want to be able to have in my life. There's an expression of it in Psalms 42 and 1. "As the heart panteth after the water brooks." So, got something I need, I want it so bad. "As the heart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God?" I look at this fervency that I see from this. I've got this strong desire for the Lord. You know what? I'm going to have to go to work now. But you know one thing that I like is whatever we do, we don't have to set God aside and say, okay, I'm going to think about you again at 8:30 tonight. Throughout our day, when do I get to appear again before God? I'm thankful for this time of us being able to come together to appear before God. But you know, we don't have to wait until Sunday morning and then, okay, Sunday night I'll get to pick it up again a few hours later maybe, or afternoon service. And then Wednesday, 3 more days I'll think about God. But throughout our day, God can be a part of it. And this is, "As the heart panteth after the water brooks," I want to be panting after God myself. I want to have that fervency in my life. There is another verse in Psalms 27 and 4. Because we get to desire, get to decide what's the priorities. "One thing have I desired of the Lord." That's going to be my focus. You know what? That race that that young man is making today, he's got one thing that he's focused on. He's not focused on whether he needs to mow the yard next Friday or not, or if his car needs a part on it or not, or any of those things. He's focused on, we've got just this one thing that I desire. "One thing have I desired of the Lord, and that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple." So today is part of that one thing I desired, and I'm putting that to be real valuable. Psalms 27 and the 8th verse, it goes on down, "When thou saidst, seek my face." What's my response? "Lord, I'd like to, but I tell you what, I've got so many things going right now, I really don't have time for it right now." This one says, "When thou saidst, seek my face, my heart said unto thee, thy face, Lord, will I seek." We have the verse also in Hebrews 10 and 25. It says, "Forsaking not the assembling of yourselves together, so much the more as you see the day approaching." That's what we're doing here today. Because we have a fervency, I want to keep this maintained. We sang the verse of this song already. Song number 300, "I am drinking at the fountain." What does it say over here in that verse? "When you said, seek my face," there was just an immediate response. "Your face, Lord, will I seek. As the heart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, O God." I'm glad that we don't have to have a committee that checks with each person. How much time this week, and I had it again this morning to come up on my phone, I'm comparing your week's usage of your phone to last week. It was up or it was down. What if somebody tried to keep a track of all of us? You really need to be thinking about the Lord this week. Keep track and let me know next Sunday. We don't do that. But it's really important for us, each one, as we are fervently following after the Lord, that we work at those things. When I find that something is taking more of my attention, and I tell you, it doesn't have to be sinful things. It can be, if you want to get your attention diverted, turn on the news for a few days. You follow after the things that are happening in the political world and your mind can get in a turmoil. But this one right here, this person was drinking at a different fountain. I am drinking at the fountain where I ever would abide. I have tasted life's pure river, and my soul is satisfied. There's no thirsting for life's pleasures, nor adorning rich and gay. For I found a richer treasure, one that fadeth not away. With fervency, I am following after that. Now at home, I heat my home with a wood stove in the wintertime. Now I have electric heat as a backup if I just don't want it or if I can't keep up. I know of someone that has wood stove heat only. You know what that means? They don't go anywhere in the wintertime. If you want to keep your house from the pipes freezing up when it's 10 below zero, remember those cold, cold days we had? Or even just below freezing, that person has to stay home with wood beside the stove. You know what? That's the way people used to live all the time. If you didn't feed that stove, everything's going to freeze up. In fact, in a lot of those old houses years ago, some of you may remember, you could feed the stove and still think you were going to freeze. I remember they would talk about homes where the snow would be on the, it would come through those old log cabins and talk about there'd be snow on their blanket in the morning. You know, we're blessed today. If I don't want to feed my stove, I let the electric heat come on, and then next electric bill, I want to feed the stove more. But I have that opportunity, and it tells me something. It requires attention. You know, I can have a fervent flame. I can have one that is overheating the house, but you give it a little bit of time and it starts settling down. Temperature starts dropping. I got to stir up those coals and throw on some more wood to heat it back up again. You know, that's where we are today. We have things that can cool us down. And it's not sinful things. It's just things that we get occupied with and kind of lose our focus sometimes. Like the person that's running the 26th mile, he had better keep his focus on at the end of this thing. I want to make it to the end, or he's not going to pace himself right for making it. Well, for us today, we're in this time where it wants to cool us back down. So there's verses that tell us you need to stir it up. Let's go to 2 Peter 3:1. This second epistle, beloved, I now write unto you, in both which I stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance. What was the reminder that he was wanting to give in this chapter right here, the third chapter? I want to remind you that the day of the Lord will come. You know how hard it is for us to keep that in a focus, a fervency of my mind realizing, you know what, the day of the Lord is coming. Sometimes we know it. It's kind of like in this third verse, there's going to be scoffers walking after their own lust saying, where is the promise of his coming? Well, you know what, I'm not a scoffer, but you know, I've heard all my life, the end of time is coming. I used to hear, when I was a child, I would hear ministers that wondered, would it be this year? And that's been 50 years ago. But you know what it says? Don't let that get you down. The day of the Lord will come. I need to have a fervency in my life that I'm all the time focusing on my life being adjusted to be ready for that time. So it has a little verse over here. In 2 Peter, the third chapter, and then the 10th verse, the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, the elements shall melt with fervent heat, the earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. You know, it's hard for me to focus on that sometimes. It just seems like it's been here last year. It'll be here next year. It'll be here 100 years from now. But there is coming a day when this is going to happen. And then it tells us what I need to be focused on. Seeing then that all these things should be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness? This is something more than the 26-mile run. this is from now till either that event or the last day of my life, that I need to realize this thing is going to be dissolved. Maybe it won't even be the end of time before my end is called, but it'll be the end of time for me. And if I will be able to have a fervency about me to be ready for that time, this will be dissolved. What manner of person ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hasting unto the coming of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved and the elements melt with a fervent heat. I was looking at that. There's warnings come to us to be ready for that time. One of those warnings was given over in Matthew in the 25th chapter, when it tells us the kingdom of heaven is likened unto 10 virgins. Those are all people that wanted to be ready for that time when the bridegroom came. They had an intention, a desire to be ready. But something happened. It said 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. You know, they did not know what day it was going to happen, when he would come. When I read this chapter about the 10 virgins, I have to think about the children of Israel when they were told, on this day, you kill this lamb. On this day, you put the blood on the doorpost. On this time, at this time, at midnight of that same day, the death angel is going to come around. You know, they knew, I've got a short period of time here to be ready and what to do about it. Well, here we're instructed, these folks knew it was coming, but they did not know when it was. And it doesn't tell us what span of time it was. It just says that by the time it happened, they were all slumbered and slept. It's just that some had oil. You know what? Time can be our enemy. I love being able to have lots of time, but you know, lots of time can cause me to get relaxed to where I don't have the fervency about serving the Lord that I should. And I want to be very careful. We got to be alert to maintain our love for God and an expectation of his return. Yes. There's another verse over in the chapter before that I want to close with. Matthew 24 and 42. When we look at these things, I want to be stirred up. I want it to be like me taking the coals in my wood stove and it's cold outside, starting to get cold in the house, and I stir it up, throw some more wood on it, and get a fervent flame again. 24 and 42. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. Know this, if the goodman of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched, would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore be also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man cometh. Fervency. It's more than just an emotion. It's a fixed determination and heading things in the direction to be able to achieve the goal. Look at that next verse. It says, who then is a faithful and wise servant? This man has no clue when the master is going to come back. So what does he do? Every day he does the things that he's supposed to do. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. So now I think of fervency. I would like to think of it as I've got an earnest determination. I want to be ready for that day. And I remember reading in a commentary, it said this man, he had some scholars under him, and they got to discussing these kind of verses. How should I do to be ready? And he said, well, I'll tell you what, you need to be ready on the last day that you will be here. Well, that immediately gave them a question. Well, tell me, how would I know what day that's going to be? He said, you won't. So you're going to have to treat every day as if it were your last. It's going to take us a fervency, an earnest determination to be able to make it. But I can make it. Yes. You know, the young man that's running that race, he would have never started it if he didn't have a plan to be able to run it all the way and make it. We can make it, and I'm thankful for that. I'd like for us to sing that song, number 223, because you know what? First of all, for us to make it, we're going to have a determination. And that song starts with, I mean to go right on, and I want to be able to do that in my life. I desire your prayers.